First Chronicles chapter 8, you have here from 29 onwards the background of King Saul. In Gibeon, or Gibeah, there lived the father of Gibeon. I take that to mean that the town of Gibeah, where Saul came from, was founded by this guy called Gibeah, or Gibeon. His wife's name was Maachah, and Kish was one of his sons, and Kish was the father of Saul. So, the guy who founded Gibeah, later called Gibeah of Saul, was in fact Saul's grandfather. So this town, this settlement, was dominated by the family of Saul. And yet, when Samuel comes to him and says, "You're going to be the king of Israel," he says, "Oh no, I'm from the least of all the families in my area. I'm a totally insignificant guy. No, 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 this is not for me." Well, I think there are times when the Bible is purposefully left open-ended in its narrative so that we are encouraged to engage with the text. Because there's clearly two options here. One was that he was actually lying when he said, "Oh, no, you know, I'm from a totally insignificant little family." Well, actually, Saul, while is described as a mighty man of valor, he was known as a kind of a warrior and quite a big guy in his own little area. So you could read it that Samuel comes to him and says, "You are chosen to be the king of Israel." And he's like, "Oh, no, no, I'm from this really insignificant little family." Well, no, he wasn't. They were not an insignificant family. His grandfather had been the one who founded their town, their settlement. Or you could then argue the other way and remember that Samuel later says to him, "When you were little, in your own eyes, you were exalted." You could read this as him being humble. Even though he was from a powerful family, he says, "Oh no, you know, we're nothing at all, really. I'm not suitable to do this great job." You could read that as him being humble. Yeah, my point is this, that the Bible is left like that. In many places, particularly in the historical sections, another example would be, did Jephthah sacrifice his daughter? Or did he simply devote her to the service of the sanctuary? Well, you can argue pro and con, but you can come down to a definite, solid conclusion there. And it's the same with a lot of things. Now, I'm not saying that the whole of the Bible is open to interpretation in this way. I'm not saying that. I'm saying that God wants us to engage with the narrative. And because he wants us to engage with the narrative, these things are left open. I'm not saying that, you know, theology, doctrine, interpretation doesn't matter of itself, not in every place. There are truths that we've got to be serious about, and it is important. And yet, there are things like this where I think it's left intentionally hanging. When you look at the meaning of the names of Saul's uncles and his father Kish, well, one of his uncles was called Baal, verse 30. Not particularly encouraging. And actually, when you look at some of Saul's own children or grandchildren, you know, Jonathan had a son called Merib-Baal. Saul had a son called Esh-Baal. Well... they shouldn't really have had the name of Baal in their names. And you look at 31 here, again, Saul's uncles, Gedor, Ahio, Zeker, none of these have got the Yah or El prefix or suffix. So I think what you see is a man coming from a totally secular, unspiritual background. He didn't know who Samuel was when he met him. He clearly was not keeping the feasts at all. He thought you had to give money to Samuel, which was not the case at all. And he was just out there looking for lost cattle instead of worrying about keeping the feasts or anything. And yet God gave him another heart. The Spirit of God came upon him. He was turned into another man. This is what God can do for secular man, no matter how secular and unspiritual is your background.